Well, welcome everyone. This is our monthly mindfulness coaching call for anyone who hasn't come before. Meg's going to be talking about what is your topic, Meg? I don't have it handy in front of me.
Well, my topic, it's funny you
Okay.
should ask. I have two titles, and when I pull up my slides, you'll see my second title. Basically, we're going to talk about the dynamic of dealing with our tendency. I'll speak for myself. Often, some of us have the tendency to do advice giving rather than coaching. So, just thinking through some of the dynamics and aspects of that.
Yeah.
That's generally what we're talking about tonight. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's Jane.
And
Hey, Jane.
oh, there's Jane. yeah, so I don't have much to say actually. I'm just here to enjoy your talk and help anyone else if they have any questions, if they need anything, I'm here. Your Skillful Means class started yesterday, right?
It did start yesterday, and Yuna and Kayla are both in that class. For those of you who've not taken Skillful Means is pretty much what the title says. It is a class where we focus on building the coaching skill set, and we cover over the course of 8 weeks, 26 different coaching skills. We also do some reflection on. There's one particular book that we're using in that class. The title of it is Helping People Change, and it's a theory. It's a change theory. I mean, there are many, many theories about how people change and what helps that to happen, but that's one of the books that we'll be talking about in the class. So if you want to brush up on your coaching skills, or if you're new to coaching, it's a great class to dip your toe in.
Great, great. Well,
Kayla, I don't know
I
if
don't
you
have much
would
to
just,
say.
I was just going to ask Kayla because I always put Kayla on the spot. Kayla
I
is
love putting put on the spot.
taking this for the second time, which I think is fabulous because, we can always go a level deeper. So I don't know if you wanted to say anything about your experience of the class and why you're taking it a second time. Put you on that spot, so go for it.
Yeah, so it's a great class. Meg is an amazing teacher. But really it goes over really the structure of a coaching session, and what kind of as a coach what we can do to help our clients get the information, retrieve the information from within themselves. And there's just a lot of great skills that are taught in that class. So I highly suggest you taking it and I'm taking it again because it's great. I mean, you can always learn more no matter what. Even if it's the same sort of topic, there's always new information that can be shared and gleaned from, conversations with different people and such. So I'm really excited. I also like that you have the one-on-one coaching sessions with your classmates because everyone coaches really differently. And so you really get to see different people's styles. Oh, that would work for me. I really like that. Oh, I didn't like the way they did that. I don't want to do that type of a thing. So you learn a lot of just beyond the classroom, just working with each other. You learn a lot, I think.
Great. Well, I appreciate your sharing that. And now a word from our sponsor. So there we go. Okay, so let me just before we sort of dive in, I would just like to invite you to take a moment to shift gears and to tune in. I imagine people have been coming from work or other things that you're doing, and this is just a moment to feel your feet on the earth and your seat in your chair and just tune in and notice what's happening in your body. I invite you just to take a deep breath in through your nose and hold it for just a second And then release. Coming fully into this moment, into this space. Taking another deep breath. Head relaxing your jaw as you exhale. And just feel yourself settle in and bring your attention to this moment in the here and now. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and check back in. So tonight I wanted to have a conversation about the topic of I'm gonna pull up my slides. The topic of moving beyond advice giving. And so I have some random thoughts about this. I'm pulling different things from my background and experience as a coach and also as a therapist and as a human being. And I'm hoping that I'll just present a few thoughts and ideas, and then I would like to invite you into a conversation to share what your thinking is about when you sort of, if and when you find yourself falling into the advice trap as a coach. So can everybody see my screen? Kayla, I did not post these before, so I will make sure that I read them for you. So the title that I discussed this with Mac a week or so ago, and I said, yeah, I just want to talk about the struggle of how sometimes we get caught into wanting to be a little more helpful than we should be. And Mac said, yeah, maybe what your title should be, how to let your clients fold their own socks. So I put that up as my subtitle. So move beyond advice giving, the joy of letting clients lead their own journey, or how to let your clients fold their own socks. So I think it's always important for us to be thinking about our role as coaches and what exactly that is. What are we there for? And I wanted to share this very short quote from Mary Oliver, because I think it has a lot to do about how I think about what coaching is. She says, very short poem, she says, instructions for living a life. Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. So I think one of the central things of value that we bring to our coaching clients is that we are paying attention to them. And we're being astonished at the wonder of their story and their experience as a human being on this planet. And we are inviting them to tell about their experiences, to reflect on their experiences, to name their strengths and their resources, to get clear about where they want to go, what their goals are, and how they can get there. So for me, the most important thing about coaching is presence. How do we bring our full attentive presence to the client? So that's just, I want to name that as being in the background as I'm talking tonight. So those of you who've taken my classes have heard me use a quote from Parker Palmer, who is an educator. He talks about how when we are supporting other people, it's important to, and this is the quote, no fixing, no saving, no advising, no setting each other straight. So those of us in helping professions, we hear that quote, no fixing, no saving, no advising, no setting each other straight. And we think, all right, if we can't do any of those things, then why are we here? What are we supposed to be doing? What is our role? And Parker Palmer, in this quote that I have up here from one of his books, is A Hidden Wholeness. He says, here's the deal. The human soul doesn't want to be advised or fixed or saved. It simply wants to be witnessed, to be seen, heard, and companioned exactly as it is. So again, that's really important, an important way of thinking about what we bring to our clients and the central value of presence and attention. Parker Palmer also says, the quick fix mentality that dominates our impatient world serves only to distract us from the lifelong journey toward wholeness. So I think it's not unusual that when we are coaching, we assume that our clients are coming because they want to make changes, they want to be empowered, they want to move toward their goals. They want to get results from the coaching. And sometimes there are things that we can do in the coaching that are really short-term goals, things that they can accomplish and move toward fairly quickly. But other times, the work that we're doing in coaching is just, it's a layer or two or three deeper than that. It really is about supporting our client as they commit to their own development as a human being and as they move toward their own journey of wholeness in their lives. So it's easy for us to get caught into that. We gotta solve a problem and think of coaching only as problem solving. And I think that raises our anxiety as coaches. We start getting worried about what are we supposed to say next, or what question do we ask next, or what are we supposed to do, or do we really have the client's agenda, and we've gotta find a solution. So I think that's one of the places that we can get tripped up in our coaching. So it's important to bring awareness to that. Mary Oliver says again, this is the first, wildest, and wisest thing I know, that the soul exists and that it is built entirely out of attention. So again, referencing the importance of just noticing what is it that we as coaches are paying attention to in our coaching sessions. So one of the ways that I, again, if those of you who have taken my classes have probably heard me talk about those moments in coaching when you suddenly realize that you are working a lot harder than the client is. I don't know if we could have a show of hands or if anybody can nod. Yep, I see a couple nods. Yeah, sometimes we feel like we're doing all the work and we may sense it in our body. I noticed that when one of my tells is when I'm leaning way into the screen. I'm just leaning right in there and that's usually like, I got to sit back. I got to pull back. I got to step back. I do a lot of thinking about family systems theory, and this is from my work as a psychotherapist, pastoral psychotherapist. And in the context of the theoretical context of Bowen family systems theory in particular, they use this term, overfunctioning and underfunctioning reciprocity. And this is a dynamic that develops when one person is doing all the work and the other person, the underfunctioner, is sort of just sitting back and not doing anything. So the question is, do we sometimes find ourselves overfunctioning in the coaching relationship? And when do you notice that you're working too hard, that you're doing too much of the work? One of my colleagues, Elaine Boomer, she gives a really simple definition of overfunctioning. She says overfunctioning is having goals for another that they do not have for themselves. Again, that's one of the places when I'm working with a client and I start thinking, you know, it would be really good if this person would just fill in the blank. Most, if not all of their problems would be solved if they would just do this particular thing. And then I notice that I'm starting to have a goal for them that they don't have for themselves. And I'm starting to long for them to change when they're either not ready to, not committed to it, or not even aware. Remember, go back to Prochaska's model of change, where he talks about those stages, pre-contemplation and contemplation. Sometimes, usually people who are in that pre-contemplation stage aren't going to find their way to coaching because that's when they're not even aware that there might be something that they need to change. Everything's working okay for them. It might not be the way they want it, but they're not willing to admit that there's something that they can do to make a change or shift something in their life. And it's when the client sort of comes into that stage of contemplation, where they're beginning to see, huh, I might do these things differently. And that's where they come to coaching and where we can start supporting them. But again, at that early stage of change and development, the client is still sort of just getting clear about what it is that they want to work on or what it is they want to change. And it might be too easy for us because of our life experience or because of our education or whatever, fill in the blank, to think that we know what's best for them and to think that this is the goal. This is the thing they should be working on. So again, that is another way of thinking about overfunctioning in the coaching relationship. So I think it's really interesting to think about that question. When is helpful being helpful helpful, and when is it not? Sometimes we are folding our clients' socks for them, and that's they need to fold their own socks. Thank you, Mac, for that wonderful image. So again, when I'm sort of thinking about the dynamic of when I find myself working too hard, it helps me to sort of get clear about, well, what is being helpful? So the first thing I would say is that we're being truly helpful when we're supporting others in their process of self-definition. We're helping them define who they are and to get clear on their goals. They are trying to take a stand as a person. They are trying to differentiate who they are in their workplaces, in their families, in the world. So when we are supporting them to do that work, I think that's when we're being most helpful. I think we're also being helpful when we remain neutral and we're not taking sides. So a person might be coming in and talking about a conflict that they're having at work, and it might be really tempting to completely side, if you will, quote unquote, with the client and agree that, oh, their boss is the most horrible person in the world. I think when we lose our neutrality, we lose our ability to be supportive and helpful. So trying to stay neutral, trying to stay curious, trying to just ask more and more questions about what's going on to help our client get clear and to decide again where they stand in the situation. Another example of when being helpful is being really helpful is when we support the efforts of our clients to identify their own challenges, to identify their opportunities, and also to identify what their resources are, their strengths, their strong suits, rather than tell them what to do. So when we are sort of stepping back from assuming we know what the person should do. Assuming we know what's best for them, but just really letting them do that work, letting them to decide what their action items will be. That's being helpful. There's a great little video by Michael Bungay Stainer. I know a lot of you who've taken my classes have seen this video. He's written a book called The Advice Trap. And this quote from him says, "Turns out curiosity is a superpower. It increases engagement and impact, but its kryptonite is the advice monster." And that's what this new book is all about. So that's what he wrote his book about. So basically, he says, when the advice monster comes forward, when we start finding ourselves wanting to give the person advice or suggest what they should be doing, Michael Bungay Stainer says the advice monster believes that you're better than the other person, that you know better, that you know more, that you can see things more clearly. And it may be true. From where you sit, you might have a lot of information, but you don't have all the information. This is, again, I wanted to share another quote from Parker Palmer. He said, "Here's the rub. Many of us helper types are as much or more concerned with being seen as good helpers as we are with serving the soul deep needs of the person who needs help. Witnessing and companioning take time and patience, which we often lack, especially when we might be in the presence of suffering. We want to apply our fix and then cut and run, figuring we've done the best we can to save the other person." So both Parker Palmer and Michael Bungay Stainer are suggesting that for us to step back from being helpful and inviting the other person to find their own solutions is the most powerful thing. And the way in sort of the antidote to the advice monster or the antidote to being too helpful is curiosity. Just the more you can ask, the more you can be curious, that puts you in a very different position. You're coming alongside the client rather than being in a one up, one down position of having the answers. So if you've not seen that little video, I suggest you take a look, and it's very helpful. He says to tame your advice monster, you must stay curious longer. And when you do that, you empower people not by giving them the answer, but by helping them find their own answer. So I really think of coaching as midwifery. We are being a midwife to the person as they are birthing a self. And some of the things that help us stay, I think, stay in our own skin and to stay in our role as coach rather than shifting into that role of consultant, where we're problem solving and finding answers, providing answers, or even mentor, where we're sharing great wisdom that we think the client doesn't have. But some of the things that really help us to stay in that role of helping the person do the work of birthing their self, a number one, stay curious. Another thing that really helps us do that in sessions is to make space for silence. You've heard me say one of my favorite quotes from David Drake. He said, "Speak only when you can improve on silence." So giving space for the client to think, for things to marinate, just to the stew is bubbling while the client is really trying to access their own work. And again, allow the client to do their own work. Don't do it for them. And another thing that I think helps us to be a midwife is to show self-compassion toward our own helplessness. Because I think one of the places where we get hooked into being super, super helpful, that's not helpful, is when we really are in touch with our own feelings of helplessness, that there's nothing, we just feel like there's nothing we can really do to change this situation. And being able to sit with that as a coach is a part of our self-regulation in coaching. And the last thing I would say, and there are many, many things you can add to this list, but these are just a few that I've thought of. Going back to that belief that the client is creative, resourceful, and whole. We quote that a lot in the mindfulness coaching school. We really believe the client is not there to be fixed. They are there to be supported, and that they can draw on their own wisdom and their own resources and their own strengths to move forward and create the life that they want to create. So that, I'm gonna stop my share. I thought I had one more. Oh, nope, I don't. I thought I had one more little Mary Oliver quote. But I just want to put that out there and ask, just curious from your own experience of coaching or being coached, is this dynamic of not knowing when to sort of put a boundary around our desire to be helpful, quote unquote, is that an issue that comes up? Do you feel yourself wanting to give advice when you know in your head that that's not what you should be doing? Some of my students, I'm sure, have heard me say over and over again, this year, I am giving up being helpful for Lent. So it's a spiritual practice for me that I have to keep coming back to again and again. It's like I have to give it up. I have to give up having the answers. I joke about how I keep a bottle of dumb pills on my desk. And sometimes I just need to take dumb pill with a client and say, tell me more about that. I don't quite understand this. You're staying curious and really digging. So anyway, is this something that you guys struggle with, or just, I'd like to invite some conversation about this. So who would like to come in? Lynn, I see, are you unmuted? Did you have something you wanted to?
Oh, I just thought everyone was gonna unmute whenever you opened it up to the room. So I just jumped on it.
Okay. Well, people who've taken my classes know that they can't twitch their eyebrows or do anything, and I'll call on them. So.
To me, it's a courtesy thing. Like, you show your face on the screen and you unmute and you participate, but that's just me. So yeah, I was just getting ready to be ready, Meg.
Okay. I appreciate you getting ready to be ready.
I'll jump in real quick.
Thanks, Mac.
I've noticed that, being helpful can be, you know, me proving that I'm smart or intelligent, or so it becomes about me instead of the other person, and so it actually it'll disempower the other person, right? If I could say a lot less and kind of coax whatever inner knowing that person has, and then that's empowering to the client, right? It's like, instead of, oh, here's all these tools that I know, let me tell you, you know, you can try this, you can try this, you can try this. And they might be like, wow, thanks, that's great. But it sets up kind of more of a codependent relationship than like, well, what kind of tools have you used in the past that have worked for you? You know, like, I'm sure you've gone through some challenges before. Yeah. It's a whole different thing than, you know, look at me, I'm so smart or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a humility in that, and like re-empowering the client. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. The question that's coming to mind is, whose need is being met? You know, are we meeting our need, as you say, to show that we're smart, or that we really are a good coach and we're worth the money they're paying us, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of less is more. I love the quote on silence, right? Like, only speak when it actually improves silence. That's profound.
Yeah.
Meg, I kind of want to toss something out there only to see if other coaches are starting to encounter this, if that's okay. So it seems like, not it seems like, obviously the world is changing and shifting and a lot more people are ramped up. Mm-hmm. So at least here in the Twin Cities area, man, we're seeing more people turning to coaching rather than therapy and counseling. Mm-hmm. Or they started off in counseling and then they want to flip over because they don't want to keep going back. They're ready to like envision their life moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. Yet I am seeing a fair amount, and I mean a fair amount of my clients coming to me with just shit happening in their lives. And it comes out in about the third session. And even though I'd like to think I'm really good at listening and asking powerful questions and being curious, because I raised two teenage daughters on my own, so that makes me a pro. Just kidding, but it's helped, right? That experience. But when a client comes basically in fight or flight into the session, I find myself in the beginning, until I can get them out of that mode and into their parasympathetic nervous system, mm-hmm. I am giving a little bit of advice first. Like, okay, Sally, for right now, I just need you to, I just say, here's what we're going to do, because that other side of their brain just isn't functioning. But once I can shift that state and give a strong suggestion or two, then they're like, oh yeah. And then we do some breath work. And as it shifts, then I can get back into curious. And there's even times mid session where they'll just start to ramp up because of what's going on in their life. And mm-hmm. I do find myself giving that kind of advice temporarily in the moment in the session.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like you have an awareness of it is temporary, and your thinking about coaching is informed by polyvagal theory, I'm assuming, in terms of the fight or flight and trying to down help the client down regulate to get into a shifting state. And again, one of the coaching skills we talk about a lot in skillful means is the coaching skill of clearing. And sometimes when you've got somebody coming in and they're just flooded with overwhelm, you can give them a container. Let's do a clearing for three to 5 minutes. Take your pick. How long do you want? And I'll time it. And so just giving them a chance to start to down, either ramp up, ramp down, whatever, to shift that state.
I guess I was curious if anyone else is noticing kind of a shift in the kinds of clients coming for coaching.
Let's ask. I mean, Rachel, I see you've unmuted. Do you have anything you wanted to?
Yeah. Sorry, my noise in my background is why I must stay on mute. My camera is on, but it doesn't seem to be working. So it's all fun. I have noticed the shift. For myself, I've had to be mindful of, are they with me as a coach needing to deal with the present moment, or are they actually needing to be in a therapy situation? So I'm having to actually create a stronger boundary and awareness around, is this in my wheelhouse, or do I need to shift it into somebody else's wheelhouse? So I've actually got a support network of people I can refer people onto if needed.
Yeah.
because it has actually, there is sometimes a being mindful that I'm not a therapist, mm-hmm. and I'm conscious of that presence for myself. Although I do recognize a lot of them have coming from therapy, and that often the comments is it's not working, or this is not a right fit for me. Mm-hmm. So I've done a couple of sessions where I'm working with a therapist and changing the therapist to look at how we can support the staying in the present moment. So there's no magic bullet. I think it's keeping really present with that person and what their needs are. And for me, it was trying not to overstep that boundary of getting into therapy. So yes, I have noticed that shift.
Thank you. Thank you. And you know, from my humble perspective, from my selfish perspective, the ideal situation seems to be 1 week they're with their therapist, and the next week they have a session with me, the next week therapy, the next week coaching. And oh my God, those clients just soar. They just soar. But yep. Not everyone is capable or willing or ready to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as Rachel, I appreciate that you were, again, reminding us to be clear about our role and that there are moments. I mean, clearly there are therapeutic or healing dimensions to coaching, but it's not therapy.
Yeah.
We're not making a diagnosis and using a treatment plan. That's not our wheelhouse, but knowing at what moment do you refer and having that network of people to refer to is really important. Yeah.
And the same goes with advice as well, I would say, because you can almost slip into that consultancy role of giving advice very quickly. So you've got the same sort of format in a way. So I've got the same thing with consultancy with regards to if they're actually wanting, especially for businesses, who are wanting health and wellbeing plans rolled out and the like, they're really wanting a consultant, and I'll be one of the support networks, but I've got a business consultant that will take the lead rather than myself, because I want to stay within that coaching arena. So it works in multiple situations.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Oh, Christy, I see that you have to leave. It's so good to see you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
So anybody else comments about, I just want to say, I do think this is maybe overstating the obvious. We are in a time of extreme societal regression right now. There's so much stuff going on in the world, and people are just at the end of their capacity to deal with everything that's coming at them. So yeah, I mean, I think that state of elevated reactivity is, I mean, I'm seeing it in my clients that are coming forward.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that urge, you know, again, anxiety is contagious. So part of our job as a coach is to downregulate ourselves. When a client comes in and their anxiety, you know, off the charts, it's contagious. We can pick up on that. So how do we stay in our own skin, downregulate, stay calm? Yeah.
Sounds like it was some good interrupting and intruding too. Like if that narrative's going, it's like, okay, let's just boop, drop in for a second. And then it's like, and then we can look at it right when we've dropped back out of the fight or flight. And so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's another coaching skill that can really help us with that, the intruding and interrupting. Bottom lining, as Anne-Marie is always saying, just, you know, boil it down, get to the bottom line. All of those, going back to the agenda, really trying to keep things contained so the client's not spinning out. Because, you know, part of our job is to create that container. Other comments? Anybody else? When do you, if you notice that you are having that urge to give advice rather than to be in a more neutral coaching stance, what do you notice about yourself? How do you know when you're getting pulled into that? What do you experience? Jane, come on in.
Sometimes I can tell that I'm being pulled in because my posture starts to reflect their posture. Mm-hmm. And so I start to mirror them in a way. So I find that if I can then pull back into my own posture, my own breathing, then that can downregulate the space for them mm-hmm. to mirror me instead. And then they still begin to make a slight change in their own posture and in a sense create more presence and bring that more from a somatics point of view. Mm-hmm. And especially as a physiotherapist, then of course I'm touching and working with people and with my hands, I'm listening to the tissue. And then as that begins to speak, it gives them a place for them to work with and speak.
Mm. Mm.
So I kind of use it a little bit in both ways, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing using yourself and your own awareness as an instrument to read what's going on with the client, and then to co-regulate, again, to use that polyvagal theory again.
It does. And so if I'm feeling anxious and tense and matching their upregulation, it just heightens that sense in the room. If I can change that in myself, they really do start to pick up on that, and something really shifts in the room that they can kind of stop and create a clearer space for themselves, to give themselves some distance from, it's almost like creating an observer in themselves so they can begin to observe themselves. Rather than being the story, they can begin to witness maybe their own story.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's another coaching skill, and also MetaView, sort of inviting them to get up in the balcony so then they can get that observer posture just to get a little bit of space to see things differently. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jane.
Reminds me a little bit, like, it's like all of us are seeking that wholeness. And if you can embody that, there's a chance, there's a likelihood that others will entrain to that field that you're hanging out in. Like, I just noticed as you're talking, Jane, it's like my nervous system's like, oh yeah, like this is nice. I could settle in. So thanks.
Jane is magic. Any other comments? I know that there are other folks here. If you,
I love that word magic. This is AT.
Hey.
And hi. I think most of my life experience comes from being the client than being the coach. So I'm reflecting on the times in my life where maybe in pre-contemplation or specifically during some really difficult times, that any kind of someone telling me what I needed to do or any, I mean, it was just, someone used the word, maybe you, Meg, disempowering. It couldn't have pushed me further away from any kind of inner truth or inner peace. And I actually have to say, like, I don't think people come to therapy. I mean, this is maybe just me that thinks this, but I don't think people come be told what to do, or to be told, to be given the answers. I think if someone specifically says, AT, what should I do here? Someone gives me permission. Someone actually asks me, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. But from my own experience in life, I needed people to give me space to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's just, as a human being, I think I'm coming from that place. No coaching technique, no, just being heard and seen. Yeah.
It's powerful. Thanks, AT. Anybody else? Any comments or observations? I think so I coach from a I coach a lot of clergy around leadership development, and whenever they start talking about how they want to, they're trying to get their congregation to do something, that's the willfulness, which I think is maybe the first cousin to what you're just talking about, AT. When we start willing people to change or to be different, that can get really gnarly. So yeah, people may think they want to be told what to do, but yeah, for the most part, they want to figure it out. They want to learn how to trust themselves. I think we all do. We want to learn how to trust our own judgments and perceptions and decisions. Yeah, thanks, AT. Anybody else?
I'm sorry, but that was beautiful. We just want to learn how to trust ourselves. Ah, stunning. Thank you for that.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, we have just a couple minutes left. Anybody else want to chime in with whatever has been stimulated in your thinking or your reflection on your coaching practice? Don't be shy. Just unmute yourself and come on in.
I'm even thinking, like, if someone comes for advice, it's often like a tool or an option or an idea. Like, here's an idea you could try. Mm-hmm. When that opens up. And even then, if they do act on a tool that we might present, or a clearing or a centering, they're doing it themselves. And so there is something there that, yeah. And I think it, you know, it only really works when someone really claims whatever that tool is. If it came from themselves or another, or, you know, a YouTube they watched, it's like, it only works. The proof is in the pudding, I think, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there is a place in coaching to use the skill of brainstorming, right? And that's when we're inviting the person to bring their ideas forward, and you're going to bring your ideas forward. And our job is to coach, as coaches, not to be attached to any of those ideas. We're just throwing stuff out. But they're, you're right, they have to be the ones to claim it and own it and take it. And you know, again, in my niche, I'm working, I have a lot of experience. I was a pastor for 25 years. I have a lot of really great suggestions for the people who come to me. And however, I might throw some ideas out in brainstorming. I have almost always found that their ideas are way better than than my brilliant suggestions. Again, they know their people, they know their situation, they know what's at stake, they know what's required of them, they know what they're capable of, and so they can come up with the solutions that are the best fit for whatever their scenario is. I can throw ideas out, but they're the ones who have to live into it, not me.
And their ideas are keyed into their whole personality and their entire structure of reality. So it makes sense that each person coming up with their own solutions is a lot more fit than any brilliant person that's just a level, one layer out from them.
Thanks, Mac.
Yeah.
Anybody else? So let me ask you, for those of you who'd like to chime in, what are you taking away tonight? If you just want to throw out a couple of words, again, lean and focused, what are you taking away? Kayla?
Yeah, what you said about trusting themselves in their own judgments, I feel like that's really important.
Thanks.
Although I took lots of notes, that's the one that stood out the most.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, how about you? What are you taking away?
I also took lots of notes, and the word that comes up, just good reminders. It's like we know this stuff, but we need to be reminded and have these discussions to just keep reinforcing it, right? So I am going to just sit with this when we're done. I'm just going to go curl up and just sit with it and let it integrate and highlight and just read through it to let it really sink in. And then I'll ponder, like, where are the areas I can be improving upon, and just reflect on some of my sessions. And so that's more than one word, sorry, but that's my time.
Okay, great, thanks. Irina, did you have anything you wanted to name as a takeaway? I know you're new to the school. We're so glad you're here tonight.
My rooster's going. But yeah, as a new coach, I think it's really reassuring to hear, like, it's not so much like what you know or your expertise, but if you bring your presence and your curiosity, it's very assuring to hear that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. Rachel, is there anything you wanted to chime in? Are you there? I see you've
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
It made me reflective a couple of years ago when I first took Skillful Means, and thinking it's really nice to go back and revisit that. And so the words I came up with was helping people change, including myself, which is a good one.
Good. AT, are you still there?
I'm here.
What are you taking away?
I'm taking away Meg's spirit. I'm taking your spirit with me.
I've missed you. It's so good that you're here. Thanks.
It's so good to be here. I've missed you too. Thank you for your light.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hey, hi, this is Modupe. I was listening. This is my first time too, but I kept my video because I'm actually in Nigeria, so it's 1 a.m. So I'm in my night dress, so I say, hey, well, let me listen. But I'm very much probably in tune with Lynn, in terms of a lot of the things, yes, we know, but it's just really nice for us to be reminded again, and be more intentional and aware of hey, am I doing too much work? You know, am I advising? Am I putting myself in that space? I'm really a psychologist by training, you know, so I do much more of that than per se. But I think, as you've all said, there tends to be an overlap many times, because I do have clients who later on really are done with therapy, but they're just refusing to go and really sort of really want it to be more like coaching. Let's connect once in 4 weeks or something, so I can let you see where I'm going with my goals. So thank you very much.
Glad you're
actually
here.
Did stay awake for the hour. So that's good.
I'm impressed. Now, may you have sweet dreams for the rest of the night.
Thank you very much.
And Mac, what are you taking away? We'll end with you tonight.
Oh, I'm taking away, I loved the quote on only speak if it improves the silence. Like that, it just feels like gold to me, to really deepen in the listening and the presence. And the less impressive words and all the fun with the words is so great. And I love the words, but it's fun to drop in into the quiet, I think, and listen. Yeah. Less is more.
There you go.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks for a great presentation.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Body. Oh, yep. Yeah. Susan is sawing and banging in the background. Yeah. Am I improving on the silence? That's what you're taking away. Thanks, Susan. Alrighty. So thank you everybody for being here this evening. And next month, the coaching call is, what's the date, Mac? July. The second, is that correct? Is the first Tuesday in July?
It's the first Tuesday in July.
What? What did I get? I just made balloons come up. This is, I didn't even know. I got so much power here. So July 2nd, stay tuned. I'm not sure who's presenting that night, but you will be informed. Mac will send you the school will send you the. But thanks for being with us tonight. Stay well. Keep up the good work. You are making a difference in the lives of so many people. So blessings. And we'll see you in cyberspace.
Thank you.
Thanks, Meg.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Meg.
Thanks.